The Zero Input Agriculture Podcast is a solo passion project built with my ample time and meager resources. If you would like to support the show, then sign up for a paid subscription to my Zero Input Agriculture blog at Substack. As a reward, you can read all my past posts and listen to the audiobook of Taming the Apocalypse. If you prefer reading about the past and future of biological technology, you can read the ebook of Taming the Apocalypse through Amazon. And finally, please rate and review the show on whatever podcast app you use, since it helps other people find me, or recommend the show directly to anyone who could use some inspiration to become a plant breeder themselves. The minimum human habitat. Farmers and gardeners often try to maximize the yield in a given growing area. You often read exciting accounts of astonishing amounts of food produced in tiny spaces, a focus that is motivated by the massive increase in total human population in the last century, plus the migration of people into crowded cities and suburbs. Humans have some obvious basic requirements for survival, so I thought it might be interesting to do a calculation about what the minimum human habitat could be to put some hard numbers alongside the recurring stories of suburban backyard self-sufficiency. Our most immediate need for survival is oxygen, but I'll skip over this as the human population densities needed to threaten the oxygen content of the atmosphere are comically high. Water is the next most immediate requirement. Humans need about 4 liters of water for drinking per day. In my climate, we get over 1,000 millimeters of rain per year, so in theory, an annual drinking supply could be provided by a mere 1.5 square meters of collecting space if every drop was caught and retained. Rainfall averages, though, can hide variability since we don't drink water just once a year, and yearly rainfall varies dramatically in this part of the world. Records show rainfall goes as low as 400 millimeters annually every few decades, so 4 square meters would be a safer amount, coupled with around 2,000 litres of tank storage per person. For domestic uses, people consume about 100 litres of water per day, but this can be reduced to 20 litres with some effort. That would bump up the catcher surface to around 22 square meters and storage to around 5,000 litres per person. This assumes high-quality hard surfaces and storage systems are available, though, which in turn usually means industrial inputs. If humans rely on the landscape to capture and hold water so that they have sufficient surface water for consumption, then the area per person increases dramatically. This is especially true if the surface water needs to be of a high enough quality to be consumed without boiling, since crowded human settlements readily contaminate their own water supplies. At a mere 1 billion people, the waterways of the world were already widely polluted with human waste and unfit for drinking without treatment. This means the area per person needed to provide water without industrial inputs is very difficult to calculate, since it depends heavily on local landforms and cultural practices. Food energy is the next most crucial requirement, with humans unable to survive for more than a few weeks without sufficient calories. More common than total starvation is prolonged periods of insufficient food energy, a condition that limits human capacity to work, think, reproduce, and fight off disease. Humans need around 7,500 kilojoules of energy per day, more if they are working strenuously and during reproduction. So let's round that up to 10,000 kilojoules per day. Most of the world's food energy comes from a handful of grains that currently yield around 6,000 kilograms per acre, but before industrialization only yielded about 1,000 kilograms per acre. A human today would need 0.04 acres, or 170 square meters, of industrial grain to provide 1 year's calories, or around 1,000 meters, or a quarter acre, with pre-industrial yields. This is comparable to reports of 1/3 of an acre of high-yielding rice per person in pre-industrial Japan. In practice, a greater area than this was cultivated per person to allow for periodic crop failures and losses during processing and storage. Potatoes produce a more impressive-looking yield, but it is mostly water, so the final energy yield per acre is similar to grains. Tuber crops are more challenging to store as well. Even pre-industrial yields relied on access to suitable quality land and appropriate crop genetics for local conditions. In the last century, that land has mostly been degraded by industrial farming practices, and the landrace genetics has been locked up in commercial seed banks. So keep in mind that the achievability of pre-industrial yields is not straightforward at present. Protein is the next most crucial nutrient. Many tropical agricultural societies produced ample amounts of starchy calories, but were chronically deficient in protein, greatly magnifying the impact of infectious diseases. Animal sources of protein are efficient in terms of human labor expended, but use large areas of land, either in the form of the sea and bodies of water that currently produce around 10% of global protein, or through low-quality land used for terrestrial livestock. Humans need about 60 grams of protein daily. Legumes are one of the more space-efficient ways to produce protein, though bioavailability of their protein is disputed. Dry beans yield about 2,000 kilograms per acre and haven't undergone the same dramatic increases in productivity that grains experience during industrialization. Soybeans give high yields, but high levels of consumption impact health negatively. Dry beans contain about 20% protein, so a person could theoretically get a year's supply of protein from around 200 square meters of beans, or around a 20th of an acre per person. Dietitians recommend a vegetable intake of 2 to 3 cups per day, plus 1 to 2 cups of fruit, but let's just aim for 4 cups of vegetables since they are generally more efficient to grow than fruit, giving 1 kilogram per day of vegetable intake. Lettuce, as an example, yields around 25,000 kilograms per acre, meaning a person could, in theory, get their annual requirements from a mere 60 meters squared if it was cropped once per year, though lower yields in less industrialized countries suggest we should double this area for pre-industrial conditions. Putting all this together in our thought experiment, with industrial yields and inputs, you would need under 450 square meters per person to provide water, calories, protein, and vegetables. With pre-industrial systems, you would need 1,320 square meters, but this leaves out the uncertain amount of land needed to provide safe water. On paper, this represents the minimum human habitat, assuming the people are content to be naked, smelly, unsheltered, and unoccupied, apart from tending their postage stamp farms. This analysis leaves out one very important nutrient that humans need to survive that makes us quite different from other animals. Our digestive system is astonishingly weak because we depend on fire to pre-digest our food. If people tried to go raw vegan, eating mostly rice and beans, they would quickly wither away, not to mention that raw beans are toxic. As such, each person needs a supply of firewood if they don't have the luxury of flipping a switch to tap into fossil fuels to heat their food. Even with the help of improved, efficient stoves, studies have found that cooking 4 kilograms of daily food and water needs consumes around 2.4 kilograms of firewood each day per person. Bamboo has one of the highest dry matter yields, producing up to 40,000 kilograms per acre per year, with similar energy density to other wood types, though the hollow structure increases the volume of the product and makes transportation more cumbersome. This means as little as 90 square meters of bamboo plantation would supply the firewood for cooking, bumping the pre-industrial total up to 1,410 square meters per person. Slower growing timber species in cooler climates will obviously need a considerably larger area of woodlot per person, further magnified by any requirements for home heating. An analysis of the energy stored in the forests of the United States showed that converting the current energy needs to firewood would consume those standing forest reserves within a decade. Most of these places were extensively deforested before the Industrial Revolution allowed people to switch to coal as an energy source. Such an analysis also overlooks other key roles of wood, such as building structures and providing heat for manufacturing metal and ceramics. Pre-industrial agriculture relied on inputs from the wider environment into the growing areas, and modern biointensive methods recommend more than half the growing area be devoted to growing biomass crops to maintain soil health. If we accordingly double the amount of land needed per person in our experiment, we arrive at 1/4 acre per person with industrial inputs and closer to 1 acre per person with pre-industrial yields. By comparison, the arable land per capita varies around the world, from as high as 5 acres per person in Australia, though subject to a highly volatile climate, to less than 0.4 acres per person in China, Japan, and New Zealand. Europe is mostly at around 0.6 arable acres per person, and the USA is at 1.6 arable acres per person. Within nations like the USA, the majority of the people live in suburbs at a density of around 0.3 acres per person. This confirms that much of the world cannot support its population without industrial inputs. This also suggests that even with industrial inputs, that suburbia is right on the edge of being able to produce its basic needs, assuming that the land is predominantly allocated for growing food and not under roads and buildings. In short, then, suburbia is not sustainable without the ongoing importation of basic needs. What would a theoretical utopia of people living at suburban densities on fertile land look like? We have a living example today, the tiny African country of Rwanda. Here, the population density is around 0.5 acres per person, rivaling the US suburbs in a country mostly composed of subsistence farmers. In Rwanda, the rain is reliable, the temperatures are moderate year-round, and the soil is fertile. The lifting of child mortality burdens in the late 20th century saw the population explode from 3 million people in 1960 to a peak of 7 million in 1990. Rwandan tradition dictated that family farms were divided evenly between surviving children, meaning that farms were cut into smaller and smaller pieces as the population boomed, driving each farming family to the edge of starvation and fueling tensions between neighbours. This tension boiled over in the genocide of the 1990s that saw the population violently reduced to 5 million people by 1995, through massacres and people fleeing the country. This is often explained as being driven by ethnic tensions, but the violence often happened between neighbours of the same tribe who had pre-existing conflicts over land access. A large population of young people without access to land also fueled the militias that carried out the massacres. The population has grown again to 12 million people today, driven by rising inputs of fertilizer and food. Surely there is more to the project of humanity than shoehorning as many human bodies as possible onto the planet. We would do well to move beyond simply maximizing crop yields and instead prioritize resilience and adaptability of the systems that we create. Maximizing yields only shrinks the minimum human habitat. Beyond a certain point, abundance is a noose that we weave around our own necks. Thank you.